you wake in a strange room. Your clothes are foreign, and the walls are covered in objects from a different world. You don't know where or when you are, or if you're still dreaming. There are footsteps in the hall. Jumping up, you race out of the room and into the streets. You have just entered the Twilight Histories.
Hi, I'm Jordan Harbour. Thank you for listening to the Twilight Histories. This podcast is inspired by role-playing games and books where you are the hero. The storyteller is your game master, leading you through adventures to strange and exotic worlds in the multiverse. In today's show, you'll find yourself in the mountains of Persia, where you'll discover great monuments and strange religions never witnessed in our universe. This is The Ascent to Kazbek by Kevin Vabanesi. Enjoy.
There are some truly ancient parts of the world. One only needs to look at the great river valleys to find where the oldest stones have been laid. And the antiquity of these places is almost terrifying, and their mysteries are, even now, more captivating than the farthest reaches of space, if you ask me. The lands once known as Persia are such an elder realm. While one might say that civilization was pioneered in Mesopotamia, empire was perfected on the Iranian plateau. Dreaming of conquests beyond anything considered possible, Cyrus subjugated the four corners of his world, laying vast networks of roads and building palaces which would humble even the proudest kings of Babylon. The Parthians proved worthy stewards of the imperial domain, but it would not be until the heirs of Sasan that any Iranian king dreamed as Cyrus once did. And we, thanks to our fortunate position here, can dream of something even grander. See, we've discovered a timeline where the Sassanid Empire was never subsumed under the irresistible tsunami of the Caliphate. In this strange world, there is no, and will never be, a Baghdad. Instead, the King of Kings sits upon his throne at Ctesiphon, as his ancestors did. But to grow ancient as it has, this Sassanid Empire has become a much more stoic and hardy realm. Traumatized by near defeat at the hands of the Rashidun, and menaced by riders from the steppe, the Sassanid emperors of the 7th and 8th century made a wise decision to fortify their borders and their cities. The Great Wall of the Tigra runs the length of that ancient river to the Gulf, while the Indus too runs alongside a vast circuit wall leading north to Samarkand. A vast network of fortresses watch the furthest approaches to Khurazm, ever mindful of the steppe. But perhaps most splendid of all are the cities in the sky. The Sassanids of this timeline didn't lose their hunger for conquest, and most prized to them were the mountains and valleys of the Caucasus. They overran the Armenians and Iberians, and to secure their northern reaches, they engineered the construction of monumental fortress cities in the mountains. They bent stone to their will in a manner even the Romans could not match, crowning the highest peaks with temples to their most ancient faith. We're sending you to the most formidable of the Sassanid cities in the sky, Kazbek. You'll find some clothes and, more importantly, some gear over there in the staging area. Please get changed while I finish your orientation. I see you've requested something a little more hands-on. Not content to be a bystander to history, I take it. But that's fine. Most who come through here simply want to sit back and observe, but I can appreciate the desire to make a difference. you will be joining a company of the Azadan, noble warriors under the Emperor's service. As far as we can tell, the fortress city of Kazbek has been seized by religious fanatics, prompting a vigorous response from the court in Ctesiphon. We've set you up as a mercenary extraordinaire who can help them turn this siege of the city into conquest. It goes without saying, but it's going to be dangerous. And if you don't deliver, well. And now then, let's have a look at you. Very formidable. And hopefully you'll find the armor suitable to your purposes, if not quite as magnificent as you may have imagined. Kazbek reaches considerable altitudes, and if you're going to be fighting or climbing, you'll need to be light on your feet. Now, I'm sure you're itching to get in there, so please step onto the platform, and we'll get you on your way. One parting word of advice. You know what you've signed up for. Whatever you choose to do down there, however you do it, just do it decisively. We make no judgment of our travelers. All we'd prefer is that you come back alive. Mount Olympus was once revered as the dwelling place of the gods, but it is a mere anthill compared to Mount Kazbek and the limitless ambitions of the men who first scaled it. Here, Sassanid gold has shaped stone, transforming the primordial peak into a new Tower of Babel. Not the Pantheon or the Great Pyramid can surpass the sheer majesty of engineering which has made this mountain into more than just a city. Before you can even raise your eyes to the peak, you are confronted with the great circuit walls built upon the nearby mountains, raising a formidable defense, punctuated occasionally with guard towers and turrets. Thick, obsidian black stones are the first challenge to all comers, and while not quite Theodosian in scale or girth, they are more than enough to confront any army mad enough to march into the mountains. Beyond the outer walls, a massive stone ramp leads up towards the south gate and the inner walls, just wide enough to allow two horse-drawn wagons to pass. This ramp would frustrate all trying to besiege the city, for the ground below it is at a considerable drop and is anything but even. No, jagged stones await any who would stray from the narrow, icy path. The city itself looks like something drawn from the most fanciful dreams of Nimrod. Stone must have turned to clay to permit the craftsmen to forge the colonnades and staircases that gird the city. The frigid Caucasian wind flows between the columns and over the unflinching visages of titanic Lamassu, who watch over the approaches to the city like gargoyles. At regular intervals, the splendor gives way to more stoic and squat structures, likely the homes of those mad enough to live at these elevations. Even now, in the fading light of day, you can make out the faint glimmer of life-giving flames dotted across the city. Wisps of smoke rise up, making the dormant volcano that is Mount Kazbek look as if it were stirring. And atop the very peak, radiant like the throne of some deva descended to earth, are the numerous flames which light the way to the sacred heart of the city, the Fire Temple of Kazbek. You've never felt so small in your life. You come from a world of great technological wonders, where even time and space are mere formalities. And yet, this true Acropolis steals your breath away and drains the warmth from your blood. You asked for adventure, but the prospect of overcoming Kazbek seems a task even Atlas could not shoulder. you break from your reverie and feel the solid earth beneath your feet. And just in time, as a gust of wind slams into you, drawing your fur cloak tight, you try to shield yourself from the blast. You hear a snap, followed by the groaning of wood, both of which precede the flight of a flaming bundle over your head, across the gorge toward the inner walls. The fireball falls short of the city's inner walls, rolling down the side of the mountain before disappearing into a snowbank below. Kazbek is under siege, and you stand in the company of its besiegers. To either side of you, Sassanid soldiers, all dressed in thick tunics, trousers, and chainmail, clamber up the sides of the outer walls, hauling weapons, supplies, and more men up. On nearby plateaus, scant as they are, engineers run calculations while yet more soldiers load flammable bundles into the baskets of catapults. A pitiful effort. The chasm is too wide between the outer and inner walls, and the mountainous conditions mean that the few catapults present are all that the Sassanid army is able to muster. But it's obvious that Kazbek was built to withstand any siege. It may as well be the Constantinople of the mountains. You descend from the ridge and approach the main Sassanid encampment where the High Command are conducting the siege. The commanders are all dressed in colorful tunics, adorned with long, flowing fur cloaks, and crowned with caps adorned with elegant textiles and even pearls. Only one among their number looks dressed for true hand-to-hand combat. You find the silent soul at the edge of the camp, seated on a stool in front of an open flame, sharpening his saber. He's an older man, a short-cropped beard and long, curly hair, and eyes like a wolf. This is Valach, known around the camp as the Armenian.
"I don't suppose you fly?"
The man eyes you as he runs a whetstone over his blade.
"I don't know how else you plan to overcome the walls."
Standing up, Valach greets you with a nod.
"Or perhaps we should load you into one of the catapults and see how far you fly."
"We could," you say. "But I like to do things the hard way." Stretching out your hands, you warm yourself by the fire, restoring vitality to your very fingertips. You'll need it. "Do we have leave?" you ask. Valach nods. He sheathes his sword and stretches out his own hands over the flame.
"The High Command is willing to try anything at this point. They're all Asped and unaccustomed to fighting in the mountains. They are willing to trust your flight of fancy."
"And you, old man?
The way we're going will make the hike up here look like a stroll in the gardens of Persepolis."
"Lead the way." "That's enough for you." With an outstretched hand, you gesture to the great outer walls and head in that direction, passing the rank and file as they attempt to conduct their siege. Mostly, the soldiers are just standing there, shivering in the frigid cold, because beyond firing the catapults, there is nothing to be done. No man could launch an arrow across that chasm, and approaching the city on ramps would be foolhardy at best. You march along the outer walls until you find yourself at the northeast of the city. Here, it's mostly just mountain ridges, with both ramps into the city equally far away. But most importantly, you're across from the setting sun, its rays silhouetting the mountain fortress, and, more importantly, casting the gorge below it into complete and utter darkness. Looking to the moon, you find the faintest crescent visible to the naked eye. Fortunate, for even the dimmest moonlight may betray you now. You anxiously wait for the perfect alignment of the heavenly spheres, seeking perfect darkness to secure your way. You can sense the moment is upon you, and with the defenders concentrating where the missile fire is strongest, you are certain none will discover you at the outset. Prepare to descend, you say, handing Valash a pair of sturdy gloves made out of rough hide. You stoop down and pick up a bundle of rope, which looks long enough to run half the circuit of the outer wall. Help me with this. Valash lends you his hands, helping you heave the large bundle up and over the wall, sending it tumbling down into the gorge like a serpent cast out of Eden. You don't even hear it hit the bottom, which unnerves you, if only for a moment. You take a minute to inspect the rest of your gear. You've outfitted yourself with a number of daggers, hatchets, and a bow and quiver of arrows. It's the most you can comfortably carry. Nearby, you have another considerable length of rope at the ready. This one with a grappling hook at the end. Valash, for his part, has a matching rope and grappling hook, as well as his saber and a smaller blade, just in case. Valash, from when we begin the ascent until we finish climbing, you listen to everything I say. I don't see that you're a man who cares much for rank, but in this journey we're about to go on, I am your master. Do we understand each other?
Perfectly.
Valash picks up his bundle of rope and the grappling hook. But when we get into the city, you listen to me. I'll respect your talents, and you respect mine. Finally, the sun plunges below the horizon, and night begins its reign over the world. Securing your grappling hook to a piece of masonry, you help Valash shoulder his, slinging the rope over his shoulder and securing it with a cord. You toss the rope over the ledge, and taking a moment to check that the grappling hook is secure and the rope is strong, you clamber out over the icy ledge, holding onto the rope for dear life, but doing everything in your power to appear utterly serene in front of your escort. Wait until I'm about 2 body lengths down, and then start your descent. Valash nods, waiting patiently at the edge as you find your footing against the steep slope. You know not to look down, and in such all-enveloping darkness, there's not much point. But you do. It's just a vast black gulf beneath your feet, with your vision barely extending a few meters at most. For an instant, the moment strikes you with utter terror, causing your grip on the rope to slacken. Just barely, but it's enough to send you sliding down the rope until your senses snap you into a death grip, halting any further decline.
Are you all right?
Calls Valash. I'm fine. I'm fine. You take a deep breath and compose yourself. Be mindful of the rope. There was a wet spot and it compromised my grip.
Better you find out first than me, Valash laughs. It looks like you're far enough down now. May I join you?
You nod, and with that, Valash goes out over the ledge, rappelling down at a slow and steady pace. You get moving again, inching down even further into the gaping maw of the abyss. In no time at all, you can barely see the ledge from whence you came. There's only Valash above you, the inky nothingness below, and the rope tethering you to the world of the living. And so you go, descending further and further into the unknown. You finally set your feet down on solid, even ground. After what seemed like an eternity, your arms are on fire, every fiber and bit of sinew inflamed after such an effort. Your hands, even gloved as they are, burn, your palms raw from the tight grip you had to keep in order to avoid certain death. Not a moment later, Valash slides down and onto the ground, stumbling and rolling onto his back. He sucks in the air, wheezing. You offer a hand, but he waves you off, and with considerable effort, stands, propping himself up against the cliff face you were just rappelling down. He's a proud and stubborn man, and a capable warrior, you are sure. But swinging a sword is a different matter from climbing, and the body is slow to adapt to new strains. Take a moment if you need. This is a winter night, so the darkness is going to linger for quite a while. Valash nods, crumpling over a little, and spitting, possibly vomiting a bit. We've got a long way to go before we reach the far wall. And then up. Up. You try and peer out across the darkness, but as with before, your vision is limited to but a few meters ahead. You try to recall how perilous the way was, if there were any open gorges or pools of water. One false step could kill you, and it wouldn't require much of a fall. But first, we need to get across. We keep a slow and steady pace. I doubt anyone can see us down here, so we only have to worry about our own 2 feet. Let's get to it then. Balash steadies himself, and after checking his gear for a moment, joins you as you both begin your trek across the valley. You move with measured steps, mindful of the snow and ice which cling to the many stones down here. The only mercy is that there are a number of large boulders which afford you something of a handhold as you go on your way. You can still hear the distant booming of stones against the far slope and the inner walls of the city. All that ruckus to let 2 souls attempt such a foolhardy expedition. You and an old man, fumbling around in the dark, sliding about like worms in the dirt. But it feels good. And the thought that this entire operation hinges on your success is like lightning in your veins. You move at a quickening pace, and you find yourself having to stop on more than one occasion, waiting alone in the dark until Valash can catch up. And almost immediately, you set off again, slipping and sliding as more of the world reveals itself before you, while everything behind slips away into oblivion.
"Damn it, would you slow down?" cries Valash. "I'm impressed, if that's what you want to hear, but please, you said to go slow."
"I'm sorry, Valash. My excitement got the best of me. I suppose I can't blame a young one like you. I remember that thrill. I felt the same way 30 years ago when we sacked Tiflis. I was a young man then, untested on the field. The Shahanshah had come to my village a mere fortnight before I had joined the army. But his promises of glory and riches were honey to a poor stable boy like myself.
Sounds like quite the adventure."
"Oh, it was. My bones make a fuss of it now, but when we were first marching into the mountains of Wiruzan, I moved twice as fast as you do now."
"I remember the first skirmish. Slings, arrows, and spears rang down around us.
I had no idea what to do.
I'd been in a brawl or two, but I'd never picked up a sword before. I was almost killed, were it not for my good fortune."
Valash smiles. His eyes glaze over as his memory becomes almost material.
"And then we took the city. We besieged it for weeks. The rebels fought hard, but eventually, we burst through its gates, and we put them all to the sword. Seasoned warriors fled from my blade, or gave themselves up onto it. And I cut them down. I felt so powerful, as if I'd slain Ahriman himself."
Valash's eyes well up.
"And to see the Shah ride by on his mount, and thank me personally."
"Me? The stable boy?"
"It was sweet, like no wine I'd ever tasted."
You fix your eyes on Valash, watching him relive his greatest triumph. You smile, but only to avoid betraying the twinge of disappointment, or something else now welling up inside you. Glory, it seems, came at the tip of a sword, rather than the peak of a mountain or the banks of a vast river. Adventure, for Valash, was about conquering his fellow man, rather than the monuments left to man by Mother Nature. And tonight, you ask,
What keeps an old man like you going on a cold night like this?
To whet my blade in service of that same divine prince, of course. And, perhaps, receive his thanks with a knowing smile. Nothing would make me happier.
I see. You turn, trying to judge the remaining distance, but the viscous night thwarts your efforts. We should be there shortly. Mind your step. You continue on, bereft of anything to say to the seasoned warrior. You pay him no mind as he curses as his feet are frustrated by icy patches in the dark, or by the winding paths between the great boulders that litter the valley. You just pay attention to the way before you. Your thoughts turn not to the eventual outcome of your success, but to the climb which will precede it. You are here to master stone, not man. The mountain is your foe, and the only blade you intend to use is that which you bury in its cliff face as you scale it, all the way to the Temple Mount at its summit. Finally, you reach the opposite slope. You can't see far beyond a few feet, save for the pinpricks of light which must be fires burning in the city and its temple above. You touch your glove hand to the stone and feel it radiating cold. You also feel the faint rumbling of another projectile striking the southern wall.
Ah, finally. Up we go, then.
Valash removes the rope and grappling hook from his shoulder and hands it to you.
I have a feeling this is going to take a little longer than the way down.
Yes, most likely. You take the rope from Valash, feeling the weight of the grappling hook in hand. The way up is always harder, and if you don't take care, it's easy to slip and lose your way. Maybe you don't get back up.
Well, then you lead the way, my young friend.
Valash, before we climb, I wanted to ask you something. Valash crosses his arms, looking surprisingly impatient for a man who clearly has no love of climbing. If we succeed, and the people in the city are willing to surrender, the army will spare them, right? A knowing smile flashes across Valash's face.
Well, it's not as if we have to kill everyone. We're not beasts, after all.
Right. You take one of your hatchets in hand and turn to the rock face, the grappling hook held in your other hand. I'll lead the way, then. I need to secure the line, and only then do you follow. Understood?
Perfectly.
You nod, and then, without another word, you begin the climb. Using your hatchet and the grappling hook, you take hold of what natural ledges are afforded to you. Heaving yourself up, you clear the first few feet, and with your body already beginning to protest from the strain, you lead the way up. At least this time, there's light. Several, actually, to aim for as you clamber up the frigid stone, your anxious partner following closely behind. His lips, already wet at the thought of the glory that awaits atop Kazbek. You cling to the sheer rock face, your hatchet braced against a natural handhold. You take a hold of the rope and grappling hook and heave yourself up, securing the grappling hook against another rock lip. Checking that it is in fact secure, you look down and signal for Valash to climb up. Taking hold of your other hatchet, you search around for the next bit of protruding rock that will allow you to scuttle up a few feet. You find one, and with great effort, launch yourself up, swinging one hatchet down under the protrusion, sheathing the other, as you once again turn your attention to the grappling hook. Such is the climb, done without the usual luxury of pickaxes and a mallet. But the frozen stone here would require great force to drive a spike into it, and even with the din of the siege to mask your approach, the clanging of metal on metal may still echo out in the night and give your position away. And so, you're reduced to risking your life to advance an arm's length. But that does bring a thrill all its own. But any excitement you feel is instantly blunted by the weight of leading Valash up the mountain. You know he's not in this to climb to the very peak and enjoy the view or the feel of the wind at his back. No, he's interested in spilling rebel blood and bringing their heads back to the Shah. Heads you may as well be severing from their bodies yourself. You hadn't really considered what it meant to be involved in the machinations of war. The last thing you wanted to do was be dropped in some godforsaken village on the Iranian plateau, or lounge on an island paradise in the Gulf. You came for adventure, but unlike the epic poems woven in Pahlavi, there is no treasure or great love to seek in the real world. Here, a journey is merely a formality one must undertake before lives can be taken, and stories shared around the barracks and palaces as soldiers and their commanders recount the many ways one can snuff out a life. Your wandering mind makes minutes of an hour, and soon you can see the inner walls rising up, breaking from the jagged cliff face to offer smooth, polished uniformity. Once you're sure that Valash has a firm grip on another ledge, you take up the grappling hook in hand. You listen carefully, searching for even the faintest whisper of guards. You only hear the wind, and, confident in your way forward, you wind up the grappling hook, whirling it about to build momentum. Your eyes fixed on the very ledge of the inner walls. You whip the rope around until the point where further effort may see you lose your grip on the wall. And then, with a quick jerking motion, you launch the grappling hook, sending it flying, arcing up and over the wall, just clearing it. Not wasting time, you pull on the rope, drawing it back until it will give no more. And then, taking a risk, you shift your weight to it, hoping that the grappling hook will hold. It does. You sheath your hatchet and commit yourself to the rope, using your legs to kick the rest of the rope over to Valash, who takes hold of it. And then, with little more than a wave of your hand to signal him, you climb up. You're careful not to make too much noise, but you move quickly, conscious of the diminishing strength in your arms. You shimmy up the side of the wall, popping your head over the battlements to check that the coast is clear. Which it is. Not wasting time, you heave yourself onto solid ground, and then help Valash get up and over as well. In the distance, you can hear the defenders marching about, and so you make quick work of recovering the rope and grappling hook. And peering around in the dark, you find a winding staircase leading down from the walls and up to the first level of the city. You move quickly, disappearing into the shadows. The city of Mount Kazbek is naturally unlike any other to be found in the medieval world. Here, instead of wide city streets, there are narrow rings which circle the mountain, giving it a terraced layout. You have no doubt that the facades of buildings you see here conceal interiors which have been carved out of the mountain itself. And the architecture, in a manner of speaking, is very Spartan. The cold stone at this altitude must have been hard to work with, and so ornamentation is kept to a minimum, save for those structures which were obviously meant for the civil service, or the Zoroastrian priesthood. At a glance, you see the next hurdle you must overcome. There is no central staircase which leads straight to the temple summit. Instead, you see that each terraced level has one or two small ramps which lead up to the next level. And with buildings flush against the mountain, there's not much room to hide, save for the small spaces between masonry and just under the edge of the next terrace. Valash, I know you probably don't want to hear this, but we're going to have to keep climbing. If we stick to the streets, there's a good chance we'll be seen right away. My arms are going to fall off at this rate. It won't be that bad. Look, there are plenty of handholds, and if there's a ramp nearby and the coast is clear, we can take it.
No. I've had enough climbing.
Balash pulls a dagger out, twirling it around in his hand.
I'll find my own way up.
You know that way is at the tip of a dagger, and you're about to speak up to dissuade him, but Balash raises a finger to his lips. You both squat down and hold your breath. Just feet away from you, a pair of rebels, dressed in little more than wool and leather with ill-fitting armor, walk about the street. They have clubs in hand, and make a half-hearted attempt to keep guard. You and Balash huddle together in a corner between two buildings, would make easy prey. But fortunately, a combination of the shadows and disinterest on the part of these would-be defenders saves you. The two men continue on, without ever even knowing you were there. Waiting a moment, Balash grabs your shoulder and inches in, whispering in your ear.
Remember our arrangement. I respected you in your domain. But here, my word is law. Do you understand?
Glancing down, you see that Valish's grip is tightened around the handle of his dagger, and so you nod and slink back, creating some much-needed distance between the two of you.
Good. Defy me again, and I will cut you down.
Balash shoves you aside and peers out from cover.
I will meet you at the High Temple. If you are to lay your eyes on the madman who has bewitched these people, slay him where he stands. Do not hesitate.
And with that, Balash slips out into the night, keeping close to the walls of buildings as he goes. You hunker down for a moment, recouping your strength, allowing your weary muscles to recover. You take what precious little time you can, but you remain mindful of what may happen if Balash gets to the top first. Perhaps the rebel leader is a tyrant, but you have no say in whether or not they die. And to allow Balash to strike them down now, after all the help you gave him, means that the blood which may soon stain the temple floor will be on your hands as well. And so you collect yourself, and after taking one last minute to stretch, to breathe, and to focus, you take a sprint at the side of the mountain and begin your ascent to the summit. You bounce from one wall to the next, clambering up masonry, vaulting from one rooftop to the next, all in search of the next step, ledge, or column to continue your climb. Where before, your ascent up the icy slopes was slow, steady, every move carefully considered, here, you launch yourself upward with reckless abandon. All you care about in this moment is the climb, the thrill of turning this medieval fortress into your personal playground. Pay little mind to the threat of discovery. No, all that matters is the next vault, the next leap, the next challenge to your verticality, and the means by which you will overcome it in a flash. You feel as light as a bird, ascending like Icarus. No man can come between you and the summit. It's you against the mountain, and with the thrill of climbing acting like an updraft, you soar higher and higher. Your eyes dart about, eliminating untenable paths in an instant, safeguarding your path from the snow and ice which blankets the higher reaches of the mountain. But finally, your momentum comes to a halt as you pull yourself up onto the final terrace. You roll and find yourself bathed in bright light. You panic for a moment, before realizing that the light is coming from vast cauldrons which ring the summit, surrounding the great fire temple atop the mountain. Still, exposed as you are, you make a beeline for the side of the temple, hugging the walls and hiding between two solid columns decorated with reliefs of wild, spiraling vegetation. And the masonry is icy to the touch, so much so that it almost burns despite your gloves. You kneel for a moment to catch your breath, bringing your arms to your chest in an attempt to stay warm. For a moment, you forget where you are. But looking around and realizing there is nowhere else to go, you feel a warm rush from within. You stand tall and feel invigorated as you realize that your own flesh and will have carried you all the way up here to the summit of Mount Kazbek. But it feels as if there's more to be done. Satisfaction proves fleeting, and as you realize that the summit offers no sweeping view of the landscape, nor anything really beyond a frigid breeze, you set yourself a new goal. You want, no, you have to see the inside of the temple. You want to know what labors the Sassanid architects undertook, and how they lavished great splendor upon the flame which burns in never-ending reverence to the great god, Ahura Mazda. You sneak around the perimeter of the temple, staying low and silent. There's not a guard in sight. Looking at the temple, you can tell plainly that there's no window to slip in above. To maintain the fire and keep the practitioners of Zoroaster's ancient faith warm, the temple must surely be closed off from the outside world. And that means there's only one way in. Before you know it, you're standing in front of the towering wood doors, looking up at the wide wings of the Faravahar as they stretch out from the central solar disk, carrying the serene visage of Ahura Mazda upward. It's a silent reminder that even as high as man might reach, the gods are ever higher. Suddenly, a great blast of wind slams into your back, the icy gale pushing you forward, causing the heavy doors to rattle. Instinct takes over, and you reach for the handles, seizing them both and flinging the door open. Where now, a surge of intense heat slams into you, trapping you for a moment between the two currents, like a shade marooned between the Cocytus and the Phlegethon. You rush inside and pull the doors closed behind you, collapsing to the ground as your body processes the shock of the contrasting temperatures. You convulse, if only for an instant, and then the warm embrace of the temple interior brings tranquility. You stand up and take a look around. The temple interior is deceptively simple. Pristine, white stone comprises the floor, walls, and ceiling. Simple, thick, and unadorned columns hold up the roof, and two lamassu, each standing roughly 10 feet tall, guard the squat staircase which leads to the heart and soul of the temple. A basin, easily 20 feet across, rests on the elevated altar, and within it burns a vast flame, golden and glistening, and strangely tame. You feel drawn to it, and so you are, your feet carrying you forward to that elemental mystery. As you approach the altar, someone steps out from behind the flame, coming around to the staircase with haste to block your way. Whoever they are, their visage is obscured by dazzling white robes and a white silk mask which leaves only their eyes exposed.
I see the Shah's hand does indeed reach far and wide.
The masked stranger bows to you, but remains in place, firm, almost threatening.
Come to snuff out the flame of our rebellion, then.
That's not my business anymore, you say. I have no quarrel with you.
And yet, you dare set foot in this sacred space with weapons.
You put your hands up and out, trying to reassure the stranger.
My child, there's no need for that. The affront is fact, as is whatever happens next.
I mean you no harm. I just wanted to see this place. That's all.
And now you have, as you were meant to. And here I am, waiting for you, as ordained.
I don't understand.
No, I don't expect you would. You and the thousands of men hurling stones and pitch at the mountain, like minnows trying to crest the waterfall. None of you understand.
The stranger descends the steps. Something within makes you back up. You don't know if he's armed under those robes, or if he means to disarm you. At the moment, you decide it's best to keep your distance.
We are both here, you and I, because the one above made it so.
Behind the stranger, the flame becomes agitated, growing more intense and raising the temperature within the temple to that of the Arabian desert at high noon. You draw one of your hatchets and point it at the stranger. I said I have no quarrel with you. But if you try something, I will defend myself.
Of course you will. You have no choice.
The stranger laughs and, turning, gestures to the flame.
I brought you here the moment I stared into the flames and understood, truly, that I needed to share a simple fact with any who would listen. The kings and emperors of this world think that they all move under the starry sky, but our world is not clay in their hands. Our world is a machine, like the clockwork beasts of Byzantium's court. All is set in motion, and every part does what it must until the task is complete.
The flame burns brighter, and you begin to feel lightheaded.
The Shah himself cannot help but oppose that simple truth. That is his part. He foolishly believes I have enslaved all who worship here on the mountain. But the truth is that they are freer now than they've ever been. Once you glimpse the gears and levers which move the cosmos, you can find peace in knowing that you are always doing your part.
You're startled by the sound of the temple doors bursting open, sending in a frigid blast which nearly knocks you over, whipping about the robes of the stranger, causing not even the slightest disturbance within the sacred flame. You scramble to your feet and see Valash standing at the threshold, his saber in hand, blood splattered all about his face and his blade. He looks to you, eyes glistening with hunger, rage, and excitement.
I'll give it to you, young one. You are fast.
Valash steps forward, twirling his saber.
Now, strike down that heretic, or get out of my way.
The stranger retreats to the altar, stopping just short of the great flame, his robes almost touching the blazing tongues which emanate from the basin.
And now the moment has come,
says the stranger.
Let us see what part you play in all this.
The stranger stretches his arms out, as if to offer himself up to the flames. Valash inches forward, his blade raised, pointed right at you. You take both hatchets in hand, which causes Valash to step back and assume a defensive stance.
What are you doing? Stand down and stand aside. Indeed, what will you do?
Asks the stranger. And so it is that you find yourself between the two, weapons in hand. Behind you, the stranger laughs, and the fire begins to rage. You feel your heart race and sweat trickle down your forehead.
Drop your weapons now, or I will cut you down too.
Malash's arm trembles with rage, his blade rattling about.
Drop it, and we both die. Or kill me, and be done with it. Whichever it may be at peace, for it is already written.
But is it? As you stand here now, seized by uncertainty, you wonder if the next move you make will be the right one, or if it even matters anymore. But whatever the case, You know the time to act is now. Your grip tightens on your hatchets, and you take a final breath as you finally come to a decision. Someone is about to die.
So, what will you do? Will you continue your adventure? Or will you leave this world here as it is and return to the safety and boredom of your world? Have a listen to this sample of what it would be like if you stayed.
You let your cloak slip from your shoulders and onto the cold stone beneath your feet. You spread your arms out and embrace the frigid gale, rooting yourself in place through sheer concentration. Even as the wind surges over your meager tunic, scraping against your exposed flesh and whipping through your hair, you stand unmoved, conscious of the cold, but entirely untroubled. The sensation is not unlike that when you first crossed the chasm of space-time and arrived at the mountain pass which led you to the holy peak of Mount Kazbek. And here you are, standing atop the world, gazing like an eagle upon the seemingly endless mountains. The day is clear, with the only clouds being mere phantoms in the distance. The sun shines down mercilessly on Kazbek and all the earth beneath it, the rays bouncing off intermittent glaciers and snowbanks in dazzling and blinding displays of light. You admire it all, breathing in the thin, crisp mountain air. As your lungs expand to extract the scarce oxygen at this altitude, you feel an electrical sensation as if you were Zeus atop mighty Olympus. Behind you, a pair of heavy doors groan, followed by the hissing of air, and finally, a surge of familiar warmth at your back. You turn and meet the gaze of one who serves a lord far older than the thundering Sky Father. Draped in crisp white robes as always, and masked, the High Priest of Kazbek approaches, gliding over the stones like a specter. He joins you at the edge, facing straight ahead, arms folded behind his back. "Winter must have passed," you say. "I've never seen a view like this before," you say. "It's so clear. I feel like I could see forever."
"That is what the builders of this city intended. A seat atop the world, from which the King of Kings may keep an eagle-like eye on every corner of his realm."
The High Priest stretches his arms out, as if to lift them up in exaltation.
If you wish to continue your adventure, this bonus show is available to you when you sign up to our Patreon page. You must be at the recruit tier or higher to hear it. Head on over to Patreon and run a search for The Twilight Histories, or go to our website at twilighthistories.com for a direct link. If you leave a kind comment, I will be sure to pass it on to Kevin Valbonesi. Passing him your comments is seriously one of my favorite things to do, because he always gives such huge reactions that make me smile. I'm Jordan Harbour. Thank you for listening to The Twilight Histories. Until next time, take care.